Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. This week on the program, the very best of Ring of Fire. We are out this week. It has been quite a year, so we're taking a little bit of time off. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with a brand new show for you. Coming up on today's show, conservatives are freaking out about all of the revelations that have come out of the televised January 6th committee hearings. And Jesse Dollimore, host of the Dollimore Daily and the I Doubt It podcast, is going to be here to talk about those hearings and what happens moving forward. Also, massive new revelations about Lauren Boebert's sordid past from the group American Muckrakers. We'll look at those allegations and try to determine whether or not these are real. And the Uvalde police are trying to keep the body cam footage from the day of the massacre that happened at the Robb School from being made public. We'll explain why that is and why the public desperately needs to see that footage. We have all that and more coming up. And don't forget, if you want to get the full show every single week, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. You can also get Ring of Fire every single day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So please go and subscribe to that channel. And if you want more of me, you can find me across social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Farron Balanced. We've now had 2 days of televised hearings with the January 6th Select Committee. A lot of bombshells have come out. Many, many things that we didn't know. A lot of things that some of us did know. But overall, the public is finally getting their first taste of this. And joining me now to help explain what we've seen so far is Jesse Dollimore, the host of I Doubt It podcast and the Dollimore Daily on YouTube. So, Jesse, it's wonderful to have you here on Ring of Fire. So thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Farron. I appreciate you taking the time to slum it with the likes of me.
You're wonderful. Now, listen, all right. So we haven't last week on the Ring of Fire podcast, we released a little early prior to the first hearing. So we have not talked yet on this show about any of the hearings. We had Thursday night. We had Monday. So before we even get into really any specifics, just overall, what's been your takeaway from not just the information, but just the way it's been presented? You know, what's your big overall thought about what we've seen so far?
Well, because I'm someone who is critical when I think criticism is due on both sides, but you know, especially my team, the Democrats, I was a little worried that they weren't going to get it right. They were going to just fumble the ball a little bit. And I've actually been very surprised and very pleased with the manner with which they've done this. They've avoided a circus-like atmosphere, and really they're laying this thing out in a way that's very easily digestible to the average voter. And I think they're making headways, and hopefully, I said this last week, but hopefully there will be some level of evaporation of support from Donald Trump, even among people who consider themselves Trump supporters, because I think the Democrats are doing such a good job here.
You know, that was one thing, you know, I had talked in that show last week with Heather Digby Parton from Salon. We were worried, you know, about how the Democrats could handle this, because this is a big, big operation. You know, this is everything. This is the Super Bowl. You got to put it all out there on the line, and you have to do it almost flawlessly. And I agree with you. To their credit, to my surprise, they have done an exceptionally good job. The presentations, you know, intersplicing it with the testimony from Trump's people themselves. And I think that is hugely powerful, because they're not necessarily the ones telling the story. They're letting Trump's people via these testimonies tell the story. And I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I think it's also to piggyback on that brilliantly said point, Farron. it also, I think, is good that as much as I have almost nothing exclusively but disdain and contempt for Liz Cheney, I'm glad that they are giving her as much airtime as they are, because it's going to ring more true from someone who can't be considered a rhino or whatever pejorative that they want to fling at her. She is a fascist enabler if there ever was one. It just, for some reason in this particular case, she's not being one. I don't know if this is to wrap the topic, but the other thing that I was very pleased with is how much they were able to, like, they're very prepared. When Stepien decided, when his wife went into labor and he was unable to make it, they had a backup plan. It wasn't just, oh, well, I guess we're screwed. They're thinking ahead, knowing that there are going to be wrenches thrown into the works, and they seem prepared to handle those.
So let's talk about some of the big revelations we've seen so far. I think one of the biggest, you know, from last week's part of it, primetime, which, you know, 20 million people tuned in. That alone is huge. I know, obviously, sure, it's not the biggest audience, but when you had every network, ABC, NBC, CBS, and MSNBC, all beating Fox News. Poor little CNN still couldn't do it. You know, yeah. they were still falling behind Fox News.
Yeah.
But everybody else beat them, which is great. It means people were interested. They wanted to see what happened. So Thursday night, we find out we got a gaggle of Republicans. We only know one name so far, Scott Perry, that sought those little preemptive pardons from Donald Trump. I think that's pretty massive. You know, that is essentially consciousness of guilt in these people's minds. They knew they did something wrong, so
absolutely,
please give me a pardon. And yeah, luckily, Trump didn't grant those wishes for him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about who the others are, whether it be Mo Brooks or Andy Biggs or Paul Gosar. There was reporting early last year or late, mid into the year last year, that Paul Gosar had floated blanket pardons for people who took part in the insurrection and in the Stop the Steal movement. He doesn't really, that's not his purview to be offering presidential pardons. It is absolutely a seismic event to be dropped on the world, the country, that Republican congressmen are out there trying to cover their asses, so to speak, by looking for clemency at the very least, or a full presidential pardon for their crimes, for their crimes.
And, you know, to me, it also kind of shows, again, the committee just understanding how to lay this out. They knew this was the big one because you're always going to get the biggest audience the first night. You know,
yeah,
none of the other, we're not going to hit 20 million again, most likely. So you've got to hit everybody that you can with as much explosive information as humanly possible. And I think that is a big revelation, showing the public, listen, it was so bad that these people who are currently sitting in Congress and have not been held to account for any of this, they wanted to get out of jail free card before all this was over. I mean, if I'm the average person watching these things, that's going to shock me. Obviously, you know, we deal with this every day. We've been following this committee since the beginning. We've been following the news every day.
Yeah.
That wasn't super shocking to us. We had kind of known about this. There had been inklings, like you said, that these things were talked about. So for the average person who probably didn't know any of this existed, that had to have been something that made them, you know, whoa, that's a big thing. I had no idea.
Yeah, I agree. I have no love for Trump supporters. It's something I struggle with internally of allowing them back in the fold. I mean, we have to, if we want to win elections, if we want to win hearts and minds, we need to let them, maybe not with open arms, but we need to accept the fact that some of these people are going to regret their choice. They're going to see the error of their ways. I have to think that the import of some of these moments is going to resonate with even people who considered themselves, you know, a two-time Trump voter. And I think it's going to have some impact on public opinion going forward.
And so, okay, so now we have Monday's hearings just, you know, a couple days ago. And we find out that Rudy Giuliani allegedly, have to say allegedly because, you know, we weren't there. We can't prove anything.
Yeah.
But I'm going to put it this way. You got an allegedly drunk Rudy Giuliani, I guess, stumbling his way into the Oval Office saying, hey, guys, what if? And that, What if we just don't concede? What if we just say it was stolen? One drunk guy versus everybody else in the administration who's telling Trump, okay, please don't do this. Please, no, stop it. And he picks the drunkard to go with here.
Unsurprisingly, he goes with Rudy because, I mean, if you listen to the sequence of events, whether that be Bill Barr time after time after time after time trying to influence Donald Trump to understand the facts on the ground, to deal with reality on reality's terms, his campaign manager, even Jason Miller, is telling him where the proverbial mammal in the woods goes to the bathroom. I don't know what kind of a program you got here, Farron, so I'll keep it PG. And he goes with Rudy Giuliani. I was talking about it today to somebody, that it is interesting that you've got your Lynn Woods and your Rudy Giuliani's and your Jenna Ellis's and your Sidney Powell's. And these five or six wingnuts were able to really flex on the American people and change the hearts and minds of people who normally wouldn't buy this. And they jettisoned reason and reality for these core group of idiots of like 10 people. And it's disheartening.
Well, you know, and this is one thing we had actually discussed last week, was just the fact that if it had been anybody else with even just a remote sense of competence to them, things could have definitely turned out differently with this whole effort behind the scenes of Trump's people, you know. But instead, you did end up with Rudy Giuliani, who is, at least nowadays, very incompetent with what he does. I mean, he goes on TV and his hair is melting down his face. Okay. That's not, you don't ever want to see your lawyer in that situation. Sidney Powell comes up next after Giuliani's melting away and says, it's the ghosts and Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. And then little Jenna Ellis doesn't know what the hell's going on at any given point. And now you got Lynn That's Wood fine. And Sidney Powell in the bitter feud. You got Mike Lindell, you know, who's also apparently was advising the president at the time. All of these are grossly incompetent to the point of being humorous. But you replace any one of those people or two of those people with a fairly competent person, they might have been able to pull this off.
Yeah, it's really the sad commentary on this entire thing and Trump world is the fact that you have all of these, you know, I'm a mudslinger, so these idiots, these clowns, these conspiracy theorists, and the real problem doesn't lie with them or the fact that Donald Trump picked them over the professionals on the team. It's the fact that the professionals on the team, the Bill Barrs, the Sepians, these other characters, they kept quiet. And their silence, it is through their silence that this conspiracy was able to take hold, because there were no other rational actors in the room in the Republican Party. It's really, I think, the indictment. There needs to be accountability for the people who knew and didn't speak up.
Well, you know, that is a great point as well, because obviously, Bill Barr, what did he do? He just said, all right, screw it, I quit. I mean, no, you're in a position. Of course, you were chosen for that position to be Donald Trump's little lapdog. But at the time, you could have quit, but then you immediately go and hold a press conference and say, hang on to your seats, folks, because you're not going to believe what's actually happening here. He had a duty to tell the public this, and he easily could have done it, just like Betsy DeVos, right? She's got a new book out, she's pumping it, and she reveals, right, oh, by the way, Mike Pence, this hero of January 6th,
right,
he refused to invoke the 25th Amendment, so I quit.
Yeah.
Why did you not tell us that in January of 2021?
It is. I mean, I hold them in a lower esteem than I do than some of these, like the New York Times reporters who have held on to all of this just shocking audio for a year while they're sitting on their books. But there was a mass exodus of the cabinet. You're not just your Betsy DeVos, not just your Bill Barr, Elaine Chao. There were several other people who just left having taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they peaced out, and they didn't want to have anything to do with dealing with the reality of the situation. And they betrayed their country and the rest of us.
You know, you bring up Elaine Chao, and I just want to remind everybody, we still never got answers about the massive scandals she was involved in.
Yeah.
It's just one of the many things, you know, there were so many scandals, I guess, during the Trump years, just so many people, so many players, so many problems. that we forget about a lot of the things that happened. But yes, Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell's wife, involved in a massive scandal, allegedly funneling contracts to her family. And again, where is it? Is that dead on the vine? I mean, is that still a thing? I don't even know.
Well, that question is not for you or for me. That question is for Merrick Garland, who seems to be either petrified of his own shadow or just really likes the feel of his hands when they're being sat upon, because he's not doing anything relative to holding anyone accountable or issuing consequence in the even most slight nature for these people who have committed crimes against our nation.
And he came out this week and he said, well, I'm watching the hearings on TV. And to me, it's like, but you're the attorney general. Why are you sitting at home watching it the same way that I am? You could at least show up. You can go sit in the audience. You could zoom in if you want. But no, for you to just be sitting in your office like, hey, I'm going to put on the TV and watch the hearings too. No, you should be more involved than the average American is able to get involved too. And he's not. He is just so checked out. And it makes no sense to me.
Well, the problem for me is this isn't 3 months post the insurrection. We're a year and a half in. I realize we need justice to be dispassionate and slow as it needs to be and follow the facts where they lead us. But it wasn't yesterday. They've had time. They've impaneled a grand jury. They've heard evidence. They've already charged multiple individuals in disparate white nationalist and white separatist groups with seditious conspiracy. There's enough evidence to follow the trail upward and start having some consequences fall on the heads of people above your Stuart Rhodes and your Enrique Tarrios of the Proud Boys.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess it just seems like Merrick Garland's waiting for the season finale of the January 6th hearings, and then he's going to say, well, okay, I can't – that was a good show. I guess I got to do something now. But, you know, another problem too, you had Benny Thompson, the chairman of the committee. He came out on Tuesday, and he says, yeah, we're not going to make criminal referrals. Okay. All right. Shut it down then. Cause I guess that's it. I mean, what a stupid thing to say.
Well, oddly enough, Liz Cheney did tweet and say, well, that decision actually hasn't been made because he can't unilaterally as the chairman make that decision. It does make me wonder where his head's at. Cause up to this point, he has been a sober player. He has been someone who seems to be invested in a positive consequence filled outcome. And that was a bummer. But, I mean, not to get in the weeds, they don't need a criminal. The DOJ doesn't need a criminal referral from Congress, but it certainly would help. I think that, and this is another criticism of Democrats oftentimes, elected Democrats, not you out there, viewer. They are often too caught up and swept up in what the perception might be over what the reality actually is. This isn't a Benghazi situation. This is actual crimes against the United States and attempted overthrow of the United States government by way of overturning a free and fair and settled American election. And to let this go unpunished, to let this go without consequence, is another crime against the rest of us.
So we've got the Democrats, you know, they're a little confused about maybe we're going to do something, maybe we're not. But let's switch over to the Republicans, because the Republican response to this has been hilarious. Yeah. I absolutely love it. You've got half of them on social media saying, oh, this is a big nothing burger. Oh, well, we should be focusing on inflation and all those other things that we're going to continue to vote against doing anything about. And they just want to act like this is a giant nothing when what it's doing is showing the entire world, not just the country, the world, how insanely corrupt their party has become. So I think they're all a little scared, even the ones trying to act like this is nothing. There is a fear, I think, deep down in them that, oh, God, we're getting exposed at a horrifying rate.
Yeah, I'm a former Republican decades ago, but a former Republican. I certainly don't speak for them. It is not surprising, but still shocking the way that they completely turn against any loyalty to their country. I'm shocked by the fact that after the first night, when we're seeing brand new footage of the attack on the United States Capitol, the violent failed coup, the insurrection, and they're saying, you know, they're following the lead of Tucker Carlson. and his nightly white supremacy fireside chat on Fox News of acting like this was a trespassing event or just vandalism or a tourist event or, as Michelle Bachmann called it, a happy family reunion, rather than, again, dealing with reality on reality's terms. We all witnessed it. And for people who, I mean, we watched the first night with a group of friends, and even people who aren't as passionate or animated as I am about things were getting teary-eyed watching that footage and getting emotional for the reminder of what it was. And to deny the reality of the situation is just gross.
You know, that's a really good point. And to add on to that, my wife had not seen the footage. She's very non-political, and she's a teacher, so obviously the day it happened, she's teaching her class. They're not watching it in school. She hadn't seen any of it. So she didn't even want to sit there with me, you know, to watch it. She was like, I got to go do stuff for, you know, my grading and whatever. But I convinced her, just sit for a minute, you know, just don't leave me yet.
Yeah.
And when they started showing that footage, she was just in shock, just saying, oh my God, they really did this. Yeah. And I said, yeah. And then it showed the part where they're beating, you know, the officer with the American flag. And I said, look at this. I mean, this is, you know, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I've been going on about for the last year and a half. And I look at it almost through her eyes as somebody, again, who had never seen this. She had heard about it. She knew it was bad. But I'm hoping that there were millions more like her, people that couldn't watch it when it happened that saw it for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, that is ultimately what I'm hoping for, too, because I think a lot of people have let's not beat around the bush about it. It's upsetting. It is a trauma. It is re-traumatizing if you've watched it before, and it's a new trauma if you haven't yet seen it. So I think a lot of people do avoid these things. It's like me with police shootings, when cops are gunning down unarmed black men in the streets and just point blank shooting them in the back of the head, like in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I have a real, it's difficult for me to watch that stuff. And so I get it. But again, going back, I think that it can't not have an impact on people who truly either love their country or claim to love it, you know?
Well, you know, we have more hearings coming up. I think they've postponed the most, you know, the next one. I guess they're going to try to push that back a little bit. But if we continue on this path and we continue to get good information, because that's the big thing, you know, you got to have something. It is almost like a reality show. You got to have something that keeps people hooked. You know, the first night with the pardons, that was a big thing. The video footage we hadn't seen, that was huge. Rudy Giuliani being, you know, just stumbling around the White House. All
Don't forget
Trump's
big, massive dumps.
Yeah.
Just giant, massive dumps. That was a good one, too.
So next time, we've got to have something that does keep the public's interest in this. So suppose we keep on this path. Suppose we continue getting new information that even those of us who do it every day didn't know about. Does it move the needle, right? I mean, we're going to have a couple months after all these hearings, before the midterms. Anger could die down. People could, you know, just kind of forget about it a little bit. You and I both know that does happen, unfortunately.
Sure.
So does it move the needle for the midterms in any way?
I think we are a little distant time-wise from the midterms for it to have, unless something seismic happens. We are a little distant, and maybe their timing was a little off here, but I'm gonna suspend my critical eye and my judgment that I have for the failed strategies of the Democratic Party so often, and say that I think they're gonna do this the right way because of the importance of the issue at hand. We have two other topics that need to be covered that are directly related to the 7-part plan that Liz Cheney talked about. One is the usurpation of the Justice Department and try to install Jeffrey Clark. And then the other, which I think if they do it right, is going to be a winner. And that is explaining the criminal conspiracy to prop up this fake slate of electors in these 6 or so states. And this is going to be, if done well, a bombshell like the country has never seen, or at least since the Nixon Watergate hearings, which compared to this, seem kind of milk toasty, if that's a if that's a turn of phrase.
Well, and you know, one thing I always like to talk about is the fact that it doesn't matter how many, you know, viewers we get and subscribers we have on YouTube channels and podcasts and all that. Even Fox News, 3 million viewers a night, that's remarkable, yeah. But it's still less than 1% of the population. So you've got, let's say we take it all into account, you got at least 95% of the population, at least, that is not consuming political news on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So whereas, like I always say, you and I, we're well-versed on the fake elector scheme. We know all about it. There is probably hundreds of millions sure. that have no idea this exists. And those are the ones that that we have to reach. And so, as you say, if we're building to something kind of like that, and we make that almost, again, the season finale, like here is where it all came together. This was the culmination. These were the people and the players, and this was the plan. I think you got a real shot at convincing people, but it is so hard to predict how people, you know, will feel even a week after it happens. Look at Uvalde. Yeah. I mean, my God, how quickly we move on as a country is terrifying.
Yeah, it is why I believe you and I, and, you know, people in our cohort, Pacman and others, we have a responsibility to our audiences and to the country, if we're going to do our job responsibly, to implore people, to engage people, to tell them, you know, the person you work with or your family member or your friend or your neighbor, they might not even have the privilege to be as engaged as you are about it. So the responsibility falls to you to tell as many people as you can, to inform as many people as you can, and be an educator about the topic, to impassion your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, and the other people you come in contact with to get out there and vote, because we are at very real risk of losing the midterms. And if that happens, very possibly our democracy.
You know, you used a great term right there, educator, because that's what we need to be. We're not lecturing, or yeah. we can't go out and lecture. We can't admonish people. We can't talk down to them like, you moron, why can't you not see this? I mean, look, we could say that in videos all day. That's perfectly fine. But when you're actually engaging with people, there's a way to do it,
yeah.
you know, and there's absolutely a way to convince some of these people, not all of them, of course. There's absolutely millions of them that are totally unreachable, doesn't matter. But there's a lot of people, because they're not informed about what's happening, you know, whether they don't have the time or whether they make the choice, like, listen, politics sucks. I don't want to read this. I don't want to watch the news.
It's a drag, man.
It really, you know, it I had hair when I started this, so I'll just put it that way. But we have a duty. I love the way you said that, to educate people. So, Jesse, tell everybody real quick where they can go to get educated by you every day. Where can they find you?
Wow, that is that's hard to follow. If you're coming to me to get educated, I host a show on YouTube called The Dollimore Daily. It is virtually every day. Not quite as often as the hardest working man in the biz here with Farron Cousins, but I put out my email address and my phone number, and I really try to engage with the audience. And it's a good time. We also host a twice weekly podcast that covers the same types of topics with my co-host, the talented and lovely and scholarly Brittany Page. And, you know, we just crossed over 800 episodes of I Doubt It podcast. So we're, I guess we are dedicated to the prospect of educating.
Well, that is fantastic. And of course, you know, Twitter, Instagram, I love seeing pictures of your puppy. It is truly great. So where can people find you on social media?
I am at Dollimore on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram. If you do want to see the beautiful little 5-month-old bulldog puppy we have, I'm at Dollimore.
Jesse Dollimore, thank you so much for joining me today. Wonderful conversation. We need to do this more often, definitely.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Farron.
Thank you. And now, let's get into the news of the week. Obviously, outside of the January 6th committee, which I do have a little bit more to talk about that, but that'll come in a minute. One of the biggest stories that broke this week was about Republican Representative Lauren Boebert. The group American Muckrakers, who, as a lot of people know, that's the same group that actually took down Madison Cawthorn just 1 month ago, actually. It's already been a month since Cawthorn lost his primary. I know it seems like just yesterday, but it's been quite a while. But anyway, they've come out against Lauren Boebert now. And they actually announced this after they took down Cawthorn. They said Boebert's the next target. And this week, of course, they did their first big dump of information. And there's a lot going on with this information that they have released. And you can find it all, you know, their press release and, of course, the text messages that corroborate their story. It's at fireboebert.com. But here's the thing. It's a little short on evidence, at least right now. So, of course, that gives everybody a little bit of pause. You know, we don't want to report any of this as fact. We are just reporting it as they have reported it. You know, just being crystal clear here, don't want to get ourselves into any trouble. We are only reporting on what they have alleged, because until we have, you know, hard evidence, this is alleged. And before I get into it, I will say that they have said, you know, they did exhaustive research on this. They do have what they're calling a verified source, who, of course, requests to remain anonymous. So maybe they've got more information that will be coming out. Maybe there's video evidence. There has been a little bit of photograph. I don't know that you would call it evidence, but it does kind of look like it may support their story. So let's get into what this group has alleged Lauren Boebert did in her past. And I'll read it. This is directly from their press release. According to our investigation, in 2019, Boebert was hired by a wealthy male client in Aspen, Colorado, who was a Koch family member. Boebert's rich client subsequently introduced her to U.S. Senator Ted Cruz in Aspen in 2019. After meeting with Senator Cruz, Boebert was encouraged by him to run for U.S. Congress. After Boebert announced her campaign for Congress in December 2019, Senator Ted Cruz donated $126,000 to the Boebert campaign and helped her raise large sums of money during trips Boebert made to Texas. Boebert didn't disclose a $75,000 donation until Cruz's Federal Election Commission filings contradicted her filings. Boebert had an abortion at the Planned Parenthood Clinic in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, due to her work with a SugarDaddyMeat.com client. American Muckrakers obtained this information through an exhaustive investigation and a tip from a verified source close to this matter who has requested anonymity for fear of reprisals. We did not receive any information from Planned Parenthood or any other medical provider, nor did we obtain any information through illegal acts. All right, so just to unpack all that, Lauren Boebert, according to these reports in 2019, was working as an escort, allegedly. Don't forget, all of this is alleged. We are not stating anything as a statement of fact. Allegedly working as an escort for male clients, which in the state of Colorado, you actually do have to have a license to be an escort. They were not able to find Lauren Boebert registered as an escort at all. So if she was doing it, she was doing it illegally in the state of Colorado. They also claim that, as you know, the profile, I guess, that they uncovered, she said she was pay to play. And then, of course, they allege she not only had the abortion at Planned Parenthood, but that there was a second abortion that she also had. Now, for me personally, working as an escort, having abortions, doesn't faze me at all. I don't care. If that's what you choose, more power to you. It doesn't affect my opinion of you whatsoever. Of course, the issue here, and this is what they even mention in the press release, is the hypocrisy. You know, Lauren Boebert goes out there, denies other women an abortion, and here they say, you know, they have evidence that she may have had two herself while denying you that same right. And another thing here that people need to pay attention to, of course, is the timeline. This was in 2019. She was married with children. But at the same time, her restaurant was going under. She owed a lot of money. She had a lot of liens on the restaurant, which brings us to another story. And this one, of course, is a very real story that is currently being investigated by federal authorities. And that is that the liens that Boebert had against her restaurant miraculously totaled almost the exact amount that she billed her campaign for in mileage, which, as we've talked about, is enough mileage to drive around the circumference of the Earth 1.5 times. And given the time frame during which she reported that mileage, it would have been physically impossible for her to drive that many miles in the state of Colorado campaigning. But she reimbursed herself through the campaign funds, happened to be just enough money to pay off those liens on the restaurant, and then boom, wouldn't you know it, the liens on the restaurant got paid. So that's why the feds are looking into that. That, of course, is definitely a real and verified investigation. You know, whether or not she's lying about the mileage, obviously we do not have any confirmation on that as of this point. But she's got some problems. Her primary's coming up. I believe it's June 28th. She's got a very strong Republican opponent, a popular state senator, Don Corum, is running against her because he wants to return basically what he calls normalcy to the state of Colorado. And if these stories are true, if they gain traction, if American Muckrakers is able to come up, you know, with the hard evidence to verify everything they've said, then yeah, I would say much like Cawthorn, she's done for. Because let's not forget, Cawthorn was basically still polling ahead right up until just a couple days before that primary where he ultimately lost. It's going to be the same thing with Boebert, you know, but I want to say I trust the group American Muckrakers. I do. I mean, they did great work with Madison Cawthorn taking him down. We've got to have more evidence. You can't just say, hey, this person text messaged us and proved it. But they know that, right? American Muckrakers, they're not idiots. They're very smart. And they understand that if they're going to go forward with this kind of information, that if they can't back it up, they're going to get sued for defamation or slander. So I think we can expect more. I hope we can expect more. I would love for there to be more here. Again, it's not about working as an escort. It's not about abortions. It's about hypocrisy and, of course, hiding your past for political gain. I'm never going to be okay with those kinds of things. So that's what we're looking at right now with Lauren Boebert. But, you know, want to get back for just a moment to the January 6th investigation, because obviously Republicans are kind of freaking out about it, not happy for obvious reasons. And so this week you had Republican Representative Rodney Davis sent a letter to Benny Thompson, chairman of that January 6th committee, and he said, "When Republicans once again hold the gavel and I am chairman of the House Administration Committee, one of our first priorities is going to be launching a full investigation into Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Select Committee's circus." Again, that was Republican Representative Rodney Davis from Illinois telling Benny Thompson that you better cross your T's and dot your I's, buddy boy. Because when Republicans are in charge, we are going to investigate the investigation into January 6th. Cool. I imagine that's probably going to go about as well for you guys as your Durham investigation has gone, right? Oh, because that's been a smashing success, investigating the investigators of the Mueller investigation. This is all they have, right? If Rodney Davis actually had any kind of inkling that what the committee was doing was somehow illegal, he'd come forward with that. He'd be filing charges. They'd be filing lawsuits, as many Republicans, by the way, already have. And you know what's happened in damn near every one of those lawsuits? Republicans have lost. They've suffered embarrassing losses. They've been absolutely humiliated in court after court after court, trying to allege that this committee doesn't have the power to subpoena, that they don't have the power to compel these documents, that they don't have this power, they don't have that power. And every time the courts have looked at this and said, actually, they do. They're not doing anything wrong. They're doing what is within their constitutional authority to do. Case closed. But not for Republicans. For Republicans, it doesn't matter. There is no case closed. The case will be closed after they spend millions of taxpayer dollars on an investigation, again, into the investigation, because it's all they got. It's all they know how to do. And let's be very clear about something. This is just one of many useless, stupid investigations that they have already promised us they're going to do if they retake the House. They've also said they're going to, you know, investigate the withdrawal from Afghanistan. They're going to investigate the baby formula shortage, which they've, by the way, voted against actually solving that problem. They're going to investigate inflation, which they've also voted against solving that problem. They're going to investigate Hunter Biden, which, by the way, he's already being investigated by the DOJ, so I don't know why you would need a second House investigation that actually has less authority than the DOJ. So that's a little weird, but it's what we get. It's what we're going to get for 2 years. A House of Representatives that is doing nothing other than looking into every single aspect of Joe Biden's life, Hunter Biden's life, Joe Biden's administration, Nancy Pelosi, probably going to launch some investigations into Adam Schiff just for good measure, because that's all they can do. They don't know how to legislate. And I'm not just saying that to attack Republicans. They literally, honest to God, don't know how to legislate. We have all of these Republicans in Congress, 208 of them, right? I'm pretty sure 208, that do not know how to do their job. They don't know why they're in Washington, D.C. They're just there as essentially chaos agents. So that is what we are going to get if they take back the House of Representatives in November. So I don't need if you need me to light a bigger fire under your behind to get out there and get active to make sure it doesn't happen. But there it is. You want to have 2 years of stalemates with absolutely nothing happening, even worse than the past, you know, year and a half? Then just sit back and do nothing and let Republicans take back the House, because we will have absolutely no forward progress on anything. We will likely end up with a couple of government shutdowns. You know for a fact they're not going to negotiate on issues like the budget to keep the government running. They're not going to play nice, because that's not who they are. But for the record, McCarthy and a couple other Republicans in leadership a few months ago, you know, back when things, I guess, were a little bit different, they have come out and expressed concerns about what's going to happen if all the Republicans do for the next 2 years is investigations, but no legislation. And they're worried that by doing that, they're going to sabotage themselves ahead of the 2024 presidential election. Kind of like the Democrats, you know, after winning in 2020, they're not getting much done. So the public's like, okay, we're going to go back to Republicans. If Republicans spend 2 years getting nothing done, what's the public going to do? They're going to say, okay, well, screw these guys. We're going back to the other one. And that's going to be a bigger election again, because that is also a presidential election. And it's going to hurt them. And they know this. But unfortunately, the leadership of the Republican Party is so cowardice and so just absolutely incompetent that they refuse to actually do their jobs. They refuse to legislate. They're going to let the more radical members of the party call the shots, launch investigation after investigation. And they may win the battle in 2022, but it's likely going to cause them to lose the war in 24. And for the record, no, I did not mean for that to rhyme, but hey, sometimes it just works out that way. Speaking of investigations that need to happen, the Texas Department of Public Safety has announced this week that they ask the Office of the Attorney General to stop the release of any body cam footage from the day of the Robb Elementary School shooting in Uvalde, Texas. They do not want the public, they do not want the press to get a hold of that body cam footage of those officers who sat outside that school for over an hour. And I wonder why that is. Do we not have a right to see these cops sitting around for an hour twiddling their thumbs while kids were dying, while kids were bleeding out in that school? I would say we should get our hands on that. It's infuriating. Do we not get to see them tase and handcuff the parent who was going to try to get in that school and start saving kids because the cops wouldn't do it? I think we deserve to see that. Here is the official reasoning that these police officers are giving for not wanting to hand over this body cam footage. Revealing the marked records would provide criminals with invaluable information concerning department techniques used to investigate and detect activities of suspected criminal elements, how information is assessed and analyzed, how information is shared among partner law enforcement agencies, and the lesson learned from the analysis of prior criminal activities. Knowing the intelligence and response capabilities of department personnel and where those employees focus their attention will compromise law enforcement purposes by enabling criminals to anticipate weakness in law enforcement procedures and alter their methods of operation in order to avoid detection and apprehension. So they don't want to release the body cam footage because, folks, it's going to expose their weaknesses. We already know what your weaknesses are. You admitted it. Your chief admitted it in a press conference shortly after the shooting. Your weakness is bullets. You were afraid of getting shot. That's literally what you told us. You were afraid of getting shot. And listen, hey, I don't blame you. I'm afraid of getting shot. Which one is why I don't tell people what I do. Especially not where I'm from, in this deep red area with a lot of guns and a lot of, crazy Republicans. But that's also why I didn't choose a job where I could face the potential of gunfire every single day. I get it. Nobody wants to get shot. Nobody wants to die. But police officers understand that risk when they take the job. You signed up for this. This is the career path that you chose. And if you are not willing to do it, then step aside and we'll find other people who are. It's okay if you don't want to do it. But you cannot continue to wear that badge if you're not willing to put your life on the line. I'm sorry, but that's just a part of the job. It's an unpleasant one, yeah. And that's a conversation, a very tough conversation that we have to have. But your cowardice that day allowed children to bleed out. That body count likely would have been lower if you had charged into that school and taken the shooter. And yeah, some of you may have gotten hit. And that would have been sad. That would have been tragic. Just as tragic as those kids bleeding out, wondering why the cops aren't coming. There's no good answer to this. There's no good resolution. But these cops have to be held accountable. Again, like it or not, you did sign up for this. There are plenty of brave police officers in this country who wouldn't have hesitated. They would have gone right in. But not these Uvalde cops, or at least not the ones who were telling them to basically stand down. We deserve to see that footage. We deserve, as a country, to know where our police officers stand. Your weaknesses of that day were already exposed, right? You're not going to give valuable information to potential criminals. They saw it. You basically gave them the green light to have at least an hour to go in anywhere and commit a massive massacre because you're cowards. So release that footage. And if you're not proud of what's on that footage, you are more than welcome to step down and go find a new job. You know, basically, what we're hearing around the country is that there's more openings than there are people to fill them. There's jobs out there, folks. If you don't want to be a cop, don't be a cop. But if you make the choice to be a cop, understand the risks that come along with it and accept them or get the hell out of the way. Another story I want to talk about for just a moment, just because of the sheer ridiculousness of this particular story. Asa Hutchinson, the Republican governor of Arkansas, went on Fox News this week with Bret Baier, and he said that he hopes the future of the Republican Party, the future of leadership in the Republican Party, said he hopes it doesn't include Donald Trump. So let me read this statement from Hutchinson here. I hope that the future of the Republican Party is different than former President Trump's leadership. I hope we move in a different direction. I believe that what happened on January 6th is a lot at his feet. It was wrong for our country and for him to continue to push that election lie theory. I agree. It's the wrong direction for the Republican Party. There's many Republicans that are looking for an off-ramp, new opportunities to define leadership in the future. And obviously with President Trump, there's a lot of things that he did that were very good that the base and I agree with. But he got off track on January 6th, and that was costly error for our democracy. And I agree with a lot of the comments that he has responsibility there. And we need to make sure that's clear. So basically, according to Hutchinson, again from Arkansas, and yes, that is important, the Republicans looking for an off-ramp, right? We don't want to be tied into this guy anymore, right? He's a freak, he's a loser, he's dangerous for this country, so we're looking for the off-ramp, right? Bullcrap. Calling bullcrap right now, because if Hutchinson actually believed these, then he must not be paying attention to what's happening in his own state. Because who is the Republican nominee now for governor in the state of Arkansas and basically is going to win and become the next governor of Arkansas? Do you know who that person is? That person is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Donald Trump's former press secretary. So the state of Arkansas is literally going all in with the Trump family. And sure, Mike Huckabee, her dad, was the governor of Arkansas. He was well-loved there. So you could, I guess, make the case that no, it's not because she was with Trump. It's because she's a Huckabee. Yeah, but nobody would give a damn about her if she hadn't served as Donald Trump's press secretary. So I'm not buying that argument. Asa Hutchinson, pay attention to your own state and realize how deeply involved you all are with Trumpism. I think the real point of what Hutchinson did here was to basically give the party cover. I will admit, like, it's brave of Hutchinson to admit this on Fox News that, yeah, Trump screwed up. We don't want anything to do with him. We want him out. But what is really happening here is that Hutchinson's words are giving cover for the other cowardly Republicans in the party. They can look at this and be like, okay. We're not actually the party of Trump. They're trying to get away from it. So it's okay if I continue to support Republicans, even if I don't like Trump, because he's not going to be involved in the future. This was a way of pulling the wool over the eyes of the American public. And Hutchinson knew it. Absolutely knew what this statement would do. He deliberately tried to fleece these Fox News viewers into thinking that Donald Trump isn't going to be the future of the party, that he isn't going to be calling the shots from now to eternity. But that's not what's happening. The Republican Party, even if they say it behind the scenes, they're not actually looking for a way to get rid of Donald Trump. They're not looking to move on from him. If anything, they're getting deeper and deeper down that Trumpism rabbit hole. Now, what Hutchinson could have said and should have said was, we're looking for an off-ramp from Trump because he's a bitter old retiree living down in Florida playing golf every day that's sabotaging our party that has no power whatsoever and hasn't had power since January 20th of 2021. That's what Republicans have to do. You have to call out the fact that the only power Trump has is the power that your party keeps pretending that he has. If you were to just cut him off, if you were to just ignore him, he would have nothing. That's what they don't understand. The only reason he's still influential in your party, the only reason he's still in a position of leadership, is because you're letting him pretend he has a leadership position. It's all in his head, and now it's all in your heads too, Republicans. You did this. You created this mess. And you could fix it, but it's going to take a lot stronger words than just Hutchinson coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we're looking for the off-ramp. No, you're not. You're not getting on that off-ramp. You have passed it far too many times. You have had multiple opportunities to hold Trump accountable, to make him a pariah within the Republican Party. And every time the Republicans have gotten that opportunity, they failed to take that off-ramp. And that's all the time we have for this week's Ring of Fire. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And of course, if you want the full show every week, and access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, go and sign up to become a member at ROFpodcast.com. We also have fresh content for you 7 days a week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And also subscribe to that channel because every week now you can catch America's Lawyer with Mike Papantonio running exclusively on our YouTube channel on Thursday afternoons. It's a great show. We're happy to have it firmly at home here at Ring of Fire on our YouTube channel. So make sure you check that out as well. And if for some reason you want even more from me, you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm at Farron Balanced. Thank you very much for tuning into Ring of Fire next week. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.